Welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, counselor and marriage and family therapist. Tonight, we have a very interesting topic to discuss, and we invite all of you, our listeners, to call in and join our discussion. We're going to be talking about alcoholism and drug abuse this evening, what it is, how it affects our lives when used in excess or used illegally. And tonight, we have our guest, Sean Gregory. He is with the North Central Louisiana Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and Celebration Recovery. Sean, welcome. And secondly, we have our guest, Judge Charles Tutt. He is a member of the Caddo Parish District Court. He has presided over the drug court for several years and now works in the family law court. Welcome, Judge Tutt.
Good to be here.
So we have two excellent guests. We're going to be coming at this topic in a number of different ways, but we really want to emphasize toward the middle and the end of the program, treatment issues and recovery issues and what can be done to ameliorate and mitigate this very serious disease called alcoholism. Let me ask you, if you would, Sean, would you be willing to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hey guys, I'm Sean Gregory. I am a grateful believer who is enjoying victory over alcohol. And by the grace of God, I have not had a drink since May 17th, 2006. Truly grateful for that. And I have the honor of being a associate pastor at First Bossier and also on the board there with CADA, which is a fantastic organization that we should all as a community get behind.
CADA standing for?
The Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse.
Okay. Judge Tutt, tell us a little bit about you.
All right. My name is Charles Tutt. I was elected judge in 2014, and for the first 2 years I was a judge. I handled the drug section, which we have a drug court that involves trying to help people recover, but we also have what I was dealing with, which was the criminal section that dealt with the individuals who were charged with the crime. We would obviously try to help them with their recovery if we could, but it was primarily a criminal section, which is a good reason to be talking about what are the consequences of alcoholism and drug abuse. Right now I'm in the family law section, and I was surprised to see that many, if maybe half, if not more, of our cases probably involve some form of addiction, either alcohol or drug abuse, that lead to problems that result with people going to divorce court, which obviously the major effect of that is on the children of the marriage.
Correct. Now, Judge, you have several colleagues in the family court. There are several of you who in Caddo Parish are family court judges.
We have three family sections.
Yourself and Judge?
Judge Bobby Waddell and Judge Correa Stewart.
Okay, so there are three family court judges.
Right.
Now, in Bossier Parish, my understanding is that all of the judges handle family court cases as well.
They do.
Okay.
Yes.
And is right now, who is the judge in working with the drug court in Caddo Parish?
Aaron Lee Waddell Garrett.
Okay. So there's, and she has replaced you in that
right.
function.
Now, Craig Marcotte works with the drug court where after sentencing, the drug court works with people to help them with their recovery and kind of watches over them. They're on probation. They check up on them and so forth. Craig Marcotte, who was a drug court judge for 6 years before I took over, is still handling that drug court.
Okay. So you, our listeners, we welcome you to our program, and we ask you to call in and participate with us. We've got Sean Gregory and Judge Charles Tutt. We ask you to call in, join our program, call in at 1-800-552-8502. Shelley, did you want to ask either of our guests anything before we get started?
Well, I think that it's interesting, Judge, that you brought up how this problem impacts families that you see in court and how pervasive that is. So I think that's an important thing for us to discuss. But I'd like to start, Sean, with tell us a little bit about CADA, maybe some of the services that they provide.
Well, CADA is just an outlet for someone to, when they step out and they're looking for assistance for that, maybe that first time when the family members are looking for guidance, they can call the CADA hotline and get a hold of someone that can give them some direction. They've got several different programs that are available to the community. Last year they served nearly 2,000 clients, and their treatment center was up 46%. So there's a great demand, and you know, CADA is striving their best to meet the demand of the community. There are several different programs: CADA Adult High Intensity and Low Intensity Residential Care Treatment Program, and there's even an outpatient option, and there's a program for families and veterans as well.
And CADA also provides payment plans, payment options to make these services affordable for the community, correct?
Absolutely. There are a range of payment options, but from my experience of just working with people coming into treatment, many times an individual may be without insurance or with no money, and if they go through the interview process, they've actually been able to get into treatment with a Louisiana ID and pay next to nothing.
CADA is a wonderful asset to the community. In drug court, we send a lot of defendants, people who have been charged with drug-related crimes, we send them to CADA as part of the probation process to try to help them get off of drugs so that they're not what we call recidivists, because you know, we have way too many people in prison. We don't want to put all the drug dealers or drug users in prison, so we're always trying to find places to help them not come back, and CADA is an excellent place. It's a great program, and they will do it for free. They love insurance, but they will do it for free.
Drug court has been very impressive as well. I take step studies into Bossier Max, and many of the inmates, they are grateful that they have been incarcerated, because they need to come off of the drugs, and they didn't see a way of how to do that. And oftentimes they're talking to me on how they can get into drug court.
I need both of you to kind of tell our listeners, what do you mean by drug court? What is that?
Well, there's two different sections in Caddo Parish. One is just the section I was in, is where they send most of the cases where a drug charge is the primary charge that a person has. If somebody's charged with murder and they happen to have cocaine on them, then they're going to be tried in a criminal section with murder, and the cocaine charge will probably just go along. But someone who's distributing drugs on the street, which is a major felony, they come to the drug court and they're prosecuted in the drug section, I should say. Drug court is a separate entity that is operated by, there's a program director named Nan, whose last name escapes me now, and it's basically oversees a lot of the defendants who we think are not the highest risk for recidivism and may recover, may be able to go through that drug court program where they screen them, they do blood tests, drug tests on a regular basis, make sure they're not using, and then they can graduate from drug court and have their charges dismissed, so they don't have that on their record. So a lot of people think we're down at the courthouse trying to put everybody that uses marijuana in jail. Well, you've got to be caught with marijuana three or four times before you actually go to jail or actually sentenced to jail. We're trying to keep people out of jail and get them the kind of treatment that they need. I think you and Shelley could probably better explain that. What it appears to us is it's largely up to the person whether they want to receive the help they need or not.
Well, but, and also the services just being available. I know I worked with the drug court program in Ruston, right. And we provided group therapy and individual counseling and things like that to mm-hmm. help the individuals through this journey, hopefully right. to maintain sobriety.
And there are very good programs inside of prisons. There is a program at the Caddo Correctional Center. Mm-hmm. There's also a program over in Bossier called the Steve Hoyle Program that's operated in the, I guess it's in the Bossier Max Jail. I'm not sure exactly where it's located, but it's a very good program that helps actual inmates deal with it. And, of course, being in jail can help them avoid the use of drugs, although it doesn't, not altogether, because you get them out on work release and some of them are going to come back with some drugs in their pocket. But in any event, a prisoner is just like you or me. If a prisoner wants to get drug treatment, they can get it actually in jail.
I'm just curious about this. If somebody comes to drug court, if they are a consumer of excessive amounts of alcohol, which has caused them or led them to break the law, doesn't cause them to break the law, but it's certainly correlated with breaking the law. A consumer versus a seller and producer or a trafficker, are those not...
Those are major differences.
Can you talk about that from...
Well, of course, the way we see alcohol in court is on DWI, because alcohol is legal. With the drugs, of course, all the drugs are illegal. So if the police find somebody with cocaine in their pocket, they're generally going to arrest them and charge them with possession of cocaine. The DWIs come in from the police, but we also see a lot of alcohol involved in domestic abuse cases. Domestic abuse cases invariably get started with drugs or alcohol. Almost, I mean, it's just like one follows the other almost. So they come in drug court, they've been arrested on a call out on a domestic abuse case, and they find out that they've got drugs on them, or a lot of them are sellers. Sellers are treated differently. They are major felons. Possession of a lot of illegal drugs, it can be a felony, but not the penalty for possession is not nearly as severe as the penalty for distribution.
Okay, again, I invite you, our listeners, to call in with questions or comments, 1-800-552-8502. I want to remind you that generally the judges listen to testimony and occasionally ask questions. This may be our opportunity to ask the judge some questions. So if any of you want to cross-examine him, you're welcome to call and do that. Anything you guys want to go in one direction or another right now?
Well, I'd like to ask Sean about Celebrate Recovery. I was looking on the website, and there was one phrase that kind of stood out to me, that it's a place for anyone to deal with hurts, habits, and hang-ups. So what does that mean? Tell me about that.
You know, Celebrate Recovery is kind of interesting. If I were to go to my AA group, then everyone there is interested in no longer taking a drink. At Celebrate Recovery, we certainly specialize with chemical addiction, but it also is assisting people who may be survivors of emotional, physical, or sexual abuse. Maybe they're family members of those in some sort of dysfunction. People struggling with life issues like anxiety, depression, or rage. So it's obviously Christ-centered, 12-step program, and it's unique in the fact that many times we have several different areas of struggle. It even deals with other addictions like sex, relationship, and gambling.
Because many of those can co-occur.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's most common that they do mm-hmm. rather than they don't.
So let me ask this question, just a practical question. You know, I know where the district courts are, and I'm sure that's where drug courts occur. Where is the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, and where is Celebration Recovery? I mean, are there locations for these places?
Sure. The easy one there is for Celebrate Recovery, you can go to celebraterecovery.com, and find a group. And it's an international program. It's in jails and institutions and recovery homes. It's been translated into multiple languages. So it's on Native American reserves and all sorts of things. And then CADA has several different properties and locations throughout the city. The headquarters is over on Olive Street and Fairfield. That would be the place to go first for help. And then there's a treatment center that is on Full of Love. And there's the adolescent center that we actually haven't spoken about yet, but even for teens seeking freedom, we're so proud of these guys that at such a young age that they're getting help and healthy decision making there. Downtown at the old Steps location.
So again, I ask you, our readers, or rather our listeners, to call in at 1-800-552-8502. And join our conversation.
Isn't the difference or the primary calling card for Celebrate Recovery is that it is Christ-centered? Because AA preaches about a higher power, but it's not necessarily one religion, whereas I believe Celebrate Recovery is Christ-centered, and I think most of the groups are headquartered in churches, if I'm not mistaken.
That you're correct. That is Christ-centered recovery, based off the 12 steps. So the 12 steps are very similar. Right. That is a delineating factor there. That instead of a God of our understanding, we worship or are able to just claim that our higher power is Jesus Christ. And for those who love the scriptures and have seen that for 2,000 years, the Word of God has been bringing healing, it's partnered with the 12 steps. And the 12 steps are actually pulled right out of the Sermon on the Mount. You can see it there kind of in order. We love to pull out the scriptures and have references throughout our 12-step studies. And it's a very powerful experience for those that put their faith in Christ and have that healing.
Gosh, that's something I just didn't know. I've studied the Matthew's Gospel and the Sermon on the Mount, and I've also studied Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson mm-hmm. and the 12 steps, but I've never knew that the two were
yeah,
related.
I just didn't
realize that.
When the founder, John Baker, went to Saddleback Church in California, I believe that this was in 91, so it's been going longer than most people realize. He went to Rick and Pastor Rick, and he said, "You need a place for people like me to grow in their Christian walk." And Pastor Rick agreed. After John Baker outlined that for him, Rick was reviewing the materials, and he saw that almost verbatim, they lined up with the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. So through our materials, you can see that we use the Beatitudes right there with the steps and the principles of Celebrate Recovery, and we use companion verses as well.
Okay. Can you just say for our listeners something about, I mean, we're talking about the 12 steps, but some who are listening may not know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. So people who work the 12 steps, they work that in procession with the assistance of other people who struggle in the same areas as they do. And it's very much something that you can't read a book and walk away with all the nuggets of gold. A lot of people try, but it's only when you unlock that in fellowship with others that you find the healing. Step one is such a hard step. People have to overcome their perception, their false power that they are living under, that tells them that they could control these issues. Humans don't like to admit defeat or a lack of control, and many times through addiction,
We for instance, with alcohol, we may say, well, I'm not going to drink hard liquor, but it's fine to drink beer, and then ultimately that can creep out of control.
That would be called controlled drinking. I'm going to only drink alcohol. I'm not going to drink, or I'm only going to drink beer. I'm not going to drink hard liquor.
For the alcoholic, that would be his daydream, that, yeah, that he could have a one martini lunch. For the addict, it may be something like, I'm not going to use meth, but I think that pot really doesn't have any unhealthy habits about it. So I'll do the pot maintenance plan. And ultimately, they realize that will lead them back to other behaviors. You're not sober if you're doing pot or alcohol, but sometimes we like to have that false sense of control.
How would you define alcoholism?
You know, there are several definitions of that. Now we have alcohol use disorder. And medically, I would say alcoholism had to do with having a couple of symptoms off of a list, like withdrawal, change of appetite, withdrawal from social settings, impact on work. The person obviously is taking a substance, whether for alcoholism, that would be alcohol. They strive to maintain a good supply or have a stash of it on hand. They're taking risk. They're taking risk to obtain the substance, whether it be alcohol or other drugs. They're taking risk while under the influence. So maybe sexual promiscuity or driving while under the influence. Could have legal issues related to the usage. A pattern of denial that they have a problem, financial difficulties, having a problem with the law.
And all of these are secondary to overuse of the substances, or overuse of alcohol, or the use of illegal drugs.
And you know, truthfully, especially as far as recovery goes, now for treatment, you go when you're struggling with being addicted to the substance. But in recovery, I really like to focus rather on the unmanageability it brings to one's life. So what are the consequences that using alcohol has brought me legally? I focus primarily spiritually. Sometimes we would be ashamed to go to a church or open the Bible when that's where we get our healing, but also relationally, emotionally. So many times people have thought about ending their life from using substances, but still would say, well, I'm probably not addicted, just because there is such a powerful denial pattern going on with the mind.
And Judge, you see these effects in family court, exactly how these impact families.
Absolutely, and particularly how it affects the children of the family, because people, when they are under the influence of alcohol or an illegal drug, say, they don't always know what they're doing, and they don't always remember what they've done, and they don't always They just lose their inhibitions, and they lose control of their emotions, and it's harmful to their family. The people who are addicted to illegal drugs, it may be even worse because of the people you deal with. There aren't any. You might see it on TV. There's really nice people out there who just happen to supply cocaine, but most of the drug dealers that are arrested are carrying a weapon because they are protecting the product that they have on them and the money they have on them, so they're carrying a weapon. So you deal with some pretty rough characters when you're dealing with illegal drugs, which makes it that much more dangerous. But again, the problem is denial. They always think they can quit. You know, I can stop if it gets to be a problem. And the first thing you know, it is a problem, and you haven't stopped. And it's just a then it gets to be a sort of a vicious cycle. But many of the cases we see in domestic court are the result of addiction in one form or another.
Yeah, from our point of view as psychologists who do a lot of work in the family court, we believe that if you're addicted to alcohol and or drugs, that you really can't parent. And because I've always seen alcohol and drug addiction as a primary relationship with a chemical. And when you have a primary relationship with a chemical, it's hard to have a primary relationship with a spouse and a primary relationship with a child. Because the chemical is number one, and spouse and children become secondary or tertiary in that person's value system. And it distorts the personality to such a degree that you're not yourself. And when you're not yourself, it's hard to have a real relationship with someone else, particularly a child.
That's true. That's true. So,
pretty significant. Again, we ask, we know this is kind of a, I hate to say it, a sobering subject, but we ask you to join our conversation if you would like. 1-800-552-8502. We have Sean Gregory from the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, and we have Judge Charles Tutt from the Family Court and Drug Court in Caddo Parish District Court, the First Judicial District Court. Gentlemen, where do you want to go with this discussion next?
Well, Sean, can you tell us a little bit how Celebrate Recovery helps with abstinence? What's going on? What kind of supportive services are in place to help people maintain sobriety?
Well, our main meetings at our church is on Monday nights, so it's a wholesome environment, which can be great for young families or those who are strong in their faith but still struggling with areas, which everyone is struggling with something. And we, during our large group, we actually have a time of worship that sometimes when someone's hurting, there's nothing more than they can do than just call out to God through song, or just listen. We have a recovery lesson that we have a curriculum that works through a year-long program on Monday nights. But you can come into that program at any time, and then we have powerful testimonies of people who are getting sober from meth or heroin, fleeing a life of prostitution, same-sex attraction. It's just amazing to see the victories that people have all around you. You know, people, it's fun to see the newcomer get their year mark, or that person pick up a 34-year chip. So it's powerful. And then we have open share groups that are specific to the struggle that people are struggling with. So we do have a group for family members, codependency, life issues, and then chemical addiction. So on a separate night of the week, we have step studies, and those are men or women groups. In that group, it's a multi-issue group, so it's pretty powerful to see how you see both sides of the addiction. You can see family members and how they're struggling. Now, you wouldn't have the same family members together in a step study, but you see maybe a different family member work through their issues and the things that have happened in their life, and along with the addict. So that's a 10-month long in the classroom setting with homework step study. And those guys get...
And when you say step study, you mean studying each of the 12 steps.
Each one of the 12 steps, along with those companion verses. And there's questions that draw that out that relate to each one of the steps from your personal experience.
Shelley, do we have a caller joining us?
Yes, we do. We have Sarah from Atlanta, Louisiana. Sarah, go right ahead with your question.
Oh, I was wondering about legal opiates, oxycodones, et cetera. I mean, what about that problem?
Well, it's a definite problem. We have a lot of people coming into drug court who are addicted to opioids. A lot of them, you know, get hooked when they've had accidents, they've had injuries, but a lot of them are young people who are simply finding another way to, I don't know what the term is, but another way to excite themselves. We see a lot of people with a lot of different prescription drugs, oxycodone, all sorts of opioids, and things like Xanax, which is apparently a relaxant of some sort. We saw an awful lot of that, and we prosecuted or had several people come through the drug section who had been working in the healthcare industry and stole their employer's prescription pad because they were hooked on opioids or oxycodone or what have you, and were caught purchasing those drugs illegally. And then the guys on the street, I don't know where they get them necessarily, but a lot of drug dealers, they'll sell you marijuana, they'll sell you cocaine, they'll sell you methamphetamine, and they'll pop out some oxycodone for you if you tell them that's what you're looking for. So it's out there, and it is a definite problem. And the people who get hooked, not going out and looking for something, but who get hooked because of medical treatment or whatever, you feel for them, but they can be hooked or can be addicted just the same as anyone else. So, and it can be a problem.
That's so true. Someone who's sitting there in church, they can be prescribed opiates, and all of a sudden, as that increases, as far as their allergic reaction to addiction increases, they're stealing out of their neighbor's medicine cabinets. I'm glad you brought that up, because CADA does offer a detox program, and for alcohol and some drugs, it's really not advised to just come off of that. You could have lasting health effects from just stopping if you're addicted to alcohol. And it's also a huge help in getting off of those drugs and alcohol, because it's medically assisted at CADA.
And Sarah, I would say to you that one of the hosts of the Health Matter programs on Thursday night is Dr. Randy Brewer. And Dr. Brewer is an anesthesiologist, neurologist, and an expert in pain management. So your question to him might also be quite helpful. So you could call in sometime on any Thursday night when Dr. Brewer is hosting. He would be an excellent source of information about opioid addiction. Do you have another caller, Shell?
We do. We have Matt from Marshall. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Matt.
Hi. I was just wondering if you guys could touch on the costs versus treatment versus cost to incarcerate people, and how that's a good thing for society in general, or if you guys had any comments about homelessness and how, treatment for substance abuse or alcoholism, how that helps people get back into being able to work and being able to participate in, society in general.
Well, I can tell you that treatment is much preferable to incarceration. Incarceration is a very expensive proposition. CADA actually has inpatient programs, and then they have follow-up programs for some people don't actually need inpatient treatment, and they can just be treated as outpatients in the beginning. In terms of how to help with the homeless situation, I think that's yet another problem in terms of finding a place for them. But I would say to anyone who comes upon somebody homeless or otherwise who is addicted to some sort of drug or alcohol, that the best place to take them would be the Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And they'll evaluate them, and they know where to send them. And the best thing to do is keep them out of prison.
Probably one of the most moving statements that I heard as I just listened to someone that I was sharing this 12 steps with and taking them through that process was their account that that they were in a relationship with someone, and they said they were referring to a point in time, and they just referred to her as, and she was homeless at that time because she struggled with addiction. And that is so often the case, that when there is an addiction, that it just takes everything away. And before someone began experimenting with drugs or alcohol, I wish that they would just understand that hard fact.
But when we see them, when they come into court and they have a minor charge, we try to refer them to somewhere, Rescue Mission or the Hub Ministries. We've sent a lot of girls who you've read about human trafficking and prostitution. The Hub Urban Ministries has a program. The name of it escapes me right now, but it deals particularly with girls who are involved in prostitution and trying to help them get out of that cycle.
The Purchase program.
Yeah,
Purchase. And it works, and it's a very effective program.
I want to thank Sarah and Matt for calling in, and I invite other listeners to call with questions, comments, 1-800-552-8502. We're talking to Judge Charles Tutte and Sean Gregory from CADA and Project Celebration Recovery. So call if you want to join our conversation and have questions or comments that you want to add.
I think one of the things that I wanted to say that I forgot to say a while ago, and I just want to say it, I've told people in court more than once, and it's hard, it's a hard reality, but you ask what's good about Celebrate Recovery, what's good about AA, you're not alone. People don't seem to be able to kick these addictions on their own. But you go to Celebrate Recovery and you're in a room full of people who have the same history you do. They don't look at you like you have two heads. They understand your problem. They have empathy for you. And I think that I don't know anybody that's done it, who does it on their own.
Yeah, that support.
Yeah, the support is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Shelley, do we have another caller?
We do. Sarah actually is back.
Okay.
Sarah,
welcome,
go right
Sarah.
Well, right. I was just trying to ask the follow-up question. I mean, is there an issue in the prevalence of the synthetic opioids that is so prevalent? It's such a liberal prescribing of them. For instance, I'll go to the doctor to find out a question to some issue I have. Right away, they're pushing pills on me, and I don't blame the doctor. It's just such a prevailing atmosphere of opioids in the current context that we live. So that was the follow-up question that I wanted to ask.
Well, let me say this. There are laws that have my friends who are dentists and doctors scared to death of getting in trouble themselves, and they protect that greatly, and they will not overprescribe opioids. They're very, very careful about who they prescribe them to. You wouldn't believe what a problem they have with doctor shopping. And they find themselves trying to evaluate people and say, well, how did she end up here? And why is she saying, well, if I had some pills, I think I'd feel a lot better. So, but the doctors, their oversight boards are watching them very closely on how much they prescribe. Now, I don't doubt that there are over prescriptions out there. I'm not suggesting that, but certainly, mm-hmm. and the doctors that I know are trying to help you with avoiding opioids as opposed to pushing them on you. So you may need another doctor. I don't know.
Well, and part of that is there are a few research studies in the 80s and 90s that actually stated that opiates aren't that addictive. And so doctors taking that knowledge, thinking that these things that they've been taught in medical school, that, okay, well, maybe it's not quite as addictive as we thought. And so then there was an uptick in prescribing, and now we have this epidemic. And so I think the tides have started to turn that, we've realized this is highly addictive. This isn't, those few research studies obviously got it wrong.
Yeah, they did.
I would say that the addict is predisposed to addiction, and that makes a good point about morality. Because someone's an addict, it doesn't mean that some reason they're morally inept or anything like that, that one person took a drink and it didn't affect them that way, and the alcoholic did. You know, it is so important for the addict, as they manage their mental health issues, to get their treatment through a psych and addiction specialist rather than going to a general practitioner to prescribe for them. That it can be very dangerous for those who are addicted.
I think we have another caller.
We do. We have Fred from Central Louisiana. Go ahead, Fred.
Yes, as a healthcare provider, I see a lot of children brought to a facility that by the police or by the parents, they're high on drugs, and a lot of cases do not remember what transpired prior to them coming to the facility. And I will ask the child, do you want to get off the drugs? They'll say, yeah, I want to get off the drugs. And I say, okay, well, tell your parents who you got the drugs from. Well, I've never had one to say, okay, I got them from John Smith. They just don't do it. They won't do it. Tell them, I say, okay, if you don't do that, then you don't want to get off the drugs. And a lot of kids will, a lot of the addiction will start in childhood, 15, 16 years old.
That's true. We have a lot of people in going to the drug section in Caddo Parish who are they were 17 years old. It's been changed now. Most of them are 18 now, but that are already addicted. And in terms of trying to tell somebody where you got it, I don't think you're going to get that out of any of these kids until they get to the point where. And I don't know how they get there to the point where they know they've got to do something dramatic in their lives, because that's a dramatic step for a kid to rat out his friend or somebody who sold him the drugs.
Coming to that point of wanting to be sober is a difficult journey. Even subconsciously, we can keep a back door open to allow us to go back to using. And it's only through, I find, through working those 12 steps where we continually are faced with the true cost of using or drinking that we have a lasting desire, an internal desire rather than a desire from outside of us, maybe a family member, to actually want to take those steps of freedom.
We have another caller. We have Randall from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question or comment. Randall? Oh.
Hi, this is Dr. Brewer. Dr. Vegan actually mentioned me, so I felt like I should call and respond. if it's okay, Dr. Vegan.
I think Sarah asked a good question that of all the people that would be best to answer it,
Well, you know, the issue with, we just had a pain symposium here in Shreveport. A number of primary care providers came and had a lot of good questions about, you know, we have two major crises in our country that are colliding with each other. One is the opioid addiction crisis, and the other crisis is chronic pain. And chronic pain affects about 100 million people in our country. And opioid addiction, you know, it's taking the lives of more people every year in terms of overdoses. And so the issue really is the result of a lack of effective pain treatment, as well as the mental health care crisis that we have in terms of we have a very woefully inadequate system in place for most people to get basic, you know, behavioral health care services. And so it's made the epidemic of addiction grow even more. And so when it comes to patients who get in trouble with opioids, it's not so easy to get help as it would be if you just needed, let's say, a hip replacement or a heart stent. And so understanding that addiction is a brain disease has been the first step that a number of, you know, very forward-thinking institutions have made. But getting providers out there who are interested in confronting addiction from the standpoint of making the diagnosis and referring people to like places like CADA is extremely important. But it's really an underserved area. And what we try to do as healthcare professionals is use opioids responsibly, just like you would use any other potentially harmful treatment responsibly, like chemotherapy or an invasive surgery. You know, a number of our treatments are harmful when they're used on the wrong patients or used in the right way. And opioids have been the mainstay of pain treatment for a long time for pain after surgery, pain at the end of life, but pain in the middle of life, which is nearly universal. It's a controversial area right now, and so I would just encourage the people who are listening to manage their own level of risk and understand that if they are set up for addictions, which means they, you know, like he was mentioning, look to the outside for entertainment. If they, you know, have any history of alcoholism, if they do like their tobacco or nicotine, or if they do have family history, histories of addiction, things along those lines, it's going to be a slippery slope for them. Other people can use the medication more responsibly. But what we're seeing, Dr. Vegan, and I'll just end with this, is that a lot of patients are hurting, and when patients hurt, their other diseases don't do as well. So diabetes is not as well controlled, high blood pressure is not as well controlled, people aren't social, their family lives are affected, just as severely as it would affect them if they had addiction. And so we need to make sure that pain treatment remains available for individuals, even if they do have addiction problems or people who are at risk for addiction. And a number of the pain doctors that are here in town and across the country are looking at more innovative ways to address these problems and not just use the opioids. But thank you for inviting me to call in, and I hope some of the comments have been helpful.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brewer. It's excellent having you with us tonight. I'm glad you were here.
In spirit, always.
Okay. Again, we invite any of you who are our listeners to call us at 1-800-552-8502. Again, I remind you, we've got Sean Gregory from CADA and from Celebration Recovery, and Judge Charles Tutt from the Caddo District Court, Family Court, and Drug Court. So we've got just a few minutes left. If any of you want to call and join the conversation, please feel free to do that. Shelley, did you want to enter, take one look at any of these other areas?
Well, I wanted to, Sean, we keep on referring to you as if you're all things CADA, but you are a board member for CADA, correct?
That's correct.
I know that you explained that Celebrate Recovery is faith-based. What about the services at CADA? Are those faith-based?
CADA is, as many has state funding and has things about it, that it is not one particular faith. It does encourage a spiritual program, but if you were a non-believer, then you would be perfectly comfortable there as well.
You know, just looking at it from my point of view as a psychologist, you're talking about Jesus Christ and the Gospels and Matthew, Mark, and Luke and what's recorded there, and in those conversations or in those testimonies, which we call the Gospels, Jesus is performing various healing things. You know, he's curing blind people, and he's raising people from the dead, if you read John, and deaf people and so on. I think a lot of, in my experience with men and women who are in the recovery program, they're sort of the modern miracles of today. Because I've known a lot of men and women who have had severe alcoholism and drug abuse problems. They've gone into treatment. They're in recovery. They practice recovery. And they're sort of walking miracles, if you ask me.
They are miracles. And it's so encouraging. You know, so sometimes we can have that negative self-talk that Maybe the struggle is really hard, or there's triggers that persist, and you might think that change was not possible. But you see those miracles around you, especially when we celebrate. Our last Monday of the month is our celebration night, where people pick up chips, and to have that encouragement where people are continually getting sober is amazing. I think the miracle, I think that it can be dangerous to think that you are healed from a struggle with addiction. It's good to remember that you struggle. But the miracle is that God took that desire away, and you know, through a continued work of spiritual discipline, just like the scriptures would teach, and hard work, that you have persistent growth in that area and freedom. I think that it can be detrimental when someone looks for an easy way out.
I don't think there's anything easy about it at all. We have another caller, Shelley?
Yes, we do. We have Marie from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hello?
Yes.
Is there any place in Shreveport addicted people can go for help?
Absolutely. If you are struggling or have a family member that is struggling, then please call the Council on Alcoholism. And they will give you the directions there that you could come to their office. Let me pull that number.
So people can easily call the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Addiction or Drug Abuse and get immediate help and direction on how to get help and how to get into a program. What is the number?
Okay. The number is 222. This is a 318 area code, 222-8511. And at that point, they will assess your needs and point you in the right direction.
Now, many people self-refer to treatment programs versus other people are sent to treatment programs by husbands and wives, employers, and judges.
Absolutely.
So after we take this call, I'd like to hear your comment about outcome studies, if you know of any that way. Do we have another caller?
We do. We have Ann from Lufkin. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that besides the services provided in Louisiana, that we have a number of the same services in Texas side. In Lufkin, I work for ADAC, so it's the same initials, only it's the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Council, ADAC. And we are Region 5, 15 counties in Deep East Texas, and then there's 10 other regions that split up the whole state. So wherever you are, I'm sure that there are numbers to call and people to ask and help to be gotten. It's a little harder in the rural areas, but we try to reach out. We have some programs in some of the smaller counties, too. And I have an 800 number if anybody needs that for Texas.
Yes, tell us.
It's 844-772-3483.
Okay. And you may get a call from us to come and join our program sometime. So now you've done it. That would be good for us because we have a lot of listeners in Texas. So I think you've kind of pointed out a deficiency in us neglecting the treatment facilities that are available over there. Thank you for your call. Again, 1-800-552-8502. Can either of you address my question?
From the judge's perspective, the success rate is not that great for people who are ordered to treatment by a judge. But there are success stories. I've had parents of young people come up to me and tell me that the way we addressed it helped them. You know, sometimes the fear of going to jail for a lot of people will be the point that makes them want to get help. And when they want to get help, they'll get help. I feel certain that the success rate for self-referrals is far higher than the success rate for mandated referrals. And even at that, it's difficult. Addiction is a
really tough battle, and anybody that prevails in that battle has my admiration.
I would agree with Judge Tutt that those who coerce someone to go to treatment, it's going to be less likely for that to be their time. But it doesn't mean that it didn't begin the journey.
Right.
So it can be very valuable. Sometimes it takes several times to hear the things that you'd gain in treatment, or recovery is a lifelong pursuit. If you're trying to assist someone in getting to treatment, it's definitely better that they come to that decision on their own, rather than to be manipulated or persuaded into that situation. But it's never a bad time to begin that journey.
At least they're safe while they're in treatment.
Yeah.
One of the issues too is a lot of people are cynical about people who recover and then relapse, and then they get back into recovery and then they relapse. My position on that is that the more times you get into recovery, the better the chances are you will make that recovery last longer. So I would encourage people to not be discouraged by people who have relapsed.
Absolutely.
I think
there are very few addicts that actually recover without a relapse, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really
my experience. It's very unusual.
So I always encourage people to keep stepping toward recovery, and this is a treatable illness, and alcoholism and drug addiction is a fatal illness, and it's progressive. And so we need, as a society, to really address it very carefully and see it as a very serious problem, like Dr. Brewer was talking about, you know, that we don't have enough good treatment facilities and enough good mental health facilities in our country. I think we may have time for one last question if someone were to call, but my guess is we probably are running out of time. Is that true, Shelley?
We're getting close. Maybe
okay.
One more question.
One more question. Judge Tutt, make a statement or two about what you think is most important here, and then I'll ask you to do the same thing, Sean.
I think most important thing is encouragement.
Okay.
That's why I brought up the fact that going to a group is probably a part of most recovery, and I'll leave it at that.
Sir?
Well, you know, I would just encourage people to seek a support group, even if you or your family member is struggling with an addiction, because it is a family problem.
Thank you both for joining us today. I appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. Views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not reflect those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Wally Derleth and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. You're invited to join us in the Red River Radio studios next week for a live broadcast of Health Matters, Thursday, April 27th from 6 to 7 p.m. We'll have a panel of guests who will be addressing sexual assault and resources. Seating is limited. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti, along with Dr. Mark Vegan. Please have a good evening.